Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today and hope you've been with us for a long time. We're coming up on doing this now for 2 years, and it's been delightful to share an awful lot of diversity and insights about the community. Our goal is to bring you basically credible, valid information and insights about diverse members of our community. And Central Coast Voices addresses how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. And we want to look at the ramifications of what goes on today, whether it be change or a desire to keep the status quo, and how it affects society both today and in the future. Action for Healthy Communities is the sponsor of the program, and that is part of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. And every 3 years, Action puts out a report, and that is a report that really goes over the status of the community, if you will, an understanding of where we are as far as things that have changed, things that are staying the same, covering topics from education and children and homelessness and the economy and the environment. And that report, which comes out every 3 years, the most recent one came out in December of last year, is called Vital Signs. That report is available in its entirety. It's a PDF file that you can download or review online by going to ActionSLO. That's just ActionSLO.org. And it's available, and there is no charge for that. It's a report that you can print out, or you can keep as a file, or just review as you would like, and it'll give you some idea of what's out there. Today, we're going to talk about advocacy for arts education. And this is a topic that is important. It's important at a number of levels, but it's important for how we see the youth in our community and how we see the educational process. And it's important for me personally. For the record, because I will, during this program, probably sound like an advocate for mostly music and drama and things like that, I have to kind of clarify the following, and that is I do not play an instrument. I have never adequately played an instrument, and I've tried 3 or 4 times in my life to play an instrument, and I've always done a lousy job of it. Okay, I will tell you, though, by the way, Brian, our engineer today, is a great bass player, and we'll talk about the pros and cons of that. But I think that's really important, because sometimes when we've talked about arts before, there has been a commentary that, oh, the only people who think about the arts are people who are artistic. I can assure you, if you talk to any member of my family and my friends, they will tell you I am absolutely not artistic, but my love of the arts is probably to make sure other people get to be artistic, because it has failed me. For the record, I was a percussionist through high school. Beyond that, I have tried a couple of instruments that we can talk about some other time, and I failed at both of them. But that's really not what we're here for. But I didn't want to mention that, because I want to share with you an interesting discussion that I had probably 25 years ago. I had it with my mother, who at the time lived in Los Angeles, and I was born and raised in Los Angeles. And that was, I was telling her as my daughter was about 4 or 5 that I was appalled that somehow local education in San Luis County didn't seem to have any arts program. For some reason, the rest of the state of California did. And that became a big question. And by the way, I'll get back to that in a second, because it occurred to me I completely forgot to tell you that this is a call-in program, and we would like you to be part of this discussion. And the phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. Anyway, back to my story of 25 years ago. And I said, my mom and I were having this discussion, and then she proceeded to send me a copy of the weekly Sunday supplement of the LA Times, where there was an article about how there was no money for arts in the LA Unified School System anymore. It turned out the high school I went to, which had an orchestra when I went there, a choir, a marching band, a wind ensemble, a string quartet, and a number of other things that all functioned with a full-time teacher that was an art teacher, had gone away. It actually turned out that my high school, which, by the way, was Ulysses S. Grant High School in Van Nuys, no longer had an art teacher, pardon me, a music teacher. The music program went on because a student who was a senior was considered a gifted enough musician to keep the band and orchestra going because there was no money for it. I mention that to you because I want to remind you that was 25 plus years ago. And an awful lot of people say, oh, we just don't have enough arts because this is a rural area that can't afford it. Hogwash. It is a statewide problem. And that's probably part of what we'll talk about today. My guests today are Jenna Hartzell, and she is the Executive Director for Arts Obispo, which is the San Luis Obispo Arts Council. Sasha Irving, who's the Program Director for Studios on the Park in Paso Robles. And Elalina Imrich Keller, and actually Imrich Keller, pardon me, and she is the principal of Georgia Brown Elementary School in Paso Robles. Welcome, folks, and thank you for being here with us. And we need to talk about the arts because it's something that is lacking in a lot of environments. I guess, Elalina, I want to start with you only because you are the one who sees it probably every day and sees what is or isn't there anymore. So maybe you can tell us what still exists in your school as far as the arts are concerned, and where are we going?
In the elementary school, currently we have no more music. We do have arts, but those are only community members or volunteers that have brought them in to our programs. The PTA tries and does a really great job of trying to bring in different arts, but other than that, the teachers try to weave them in the curriculum, but there's a lot of stress to fit a lot of curriculum into a very small amount of time currently in education, and arts don't always fit nicely into that time. So we're really struggling to have the resources and just have it a part of a regular curriculum in education currently. I've also worked at the high school level, and those programs have shrunk down. I really think if we didn't have college requirements that mandated that students have the performing arts, fine and performing arts, I'm not sure that we'd have any arts education at all in public schools anymore.
I think people will argue about what the value and what programs should be involved in schools, but I think no one can disagree with the concept that schools that have arts programs have lower truancy and lower dropouts. I saw that when I was a kid. The kids that we thought were never going to make it through high school, when you basically told them that they couldn't be in the band anymore, they couldn't be in choir anymore, all of a sudden they miraculously found a way to not leave school. So I think that's something that we can't disagree with. What are we doing in San Luis County?
We actually established a local advocacy network, and thanks to the California Alliance for Arts Education, they are a statewide network that have local advocacy networks throughout the state, and they've built an army of advocates to help change policies and funding and accountability measures at the state and the district level. And so here in San Luis Obispo County, we are lucky enough to have a local advocacy network, and we're dedicated to getting the arts back into the classrooms in every school community, but that's going to take a lot of time, and it's going to take a lot of people stepping up to say that's what they want. We've just started this. Last November was our kickoff, so we're coming up on 1 year, and we've established a leadership team to kind of help with set priorities and goals, and so we're moving right along.
Okay. I think a lot of people assume that all this is about is let's raise money and throw it at the arts, and that's not what it is, I guess. So how do we break that cycle that people think, oh, it's just about whether or not we've got money?
I mean, the hard thing is that right now there isn't a lot of money to throw into supplies. I mean, that's not going to make a difference. Giving each student an extra crayon isn't going to help. We need to start at the larger level and make the districts realize that they are mandated by the state and they need to, you know, set aside funds that are for arts education.
We can talk about this forever. There are some people who are going to care about it. There are some people who aren't going to care about it. What happened to the money we had when I was a kid? Okay, for the record, I graduated high school about 45 years ago. Okay, so and there was a lot of money. I mean, there was we had money for band uniforms for marching band. We had money for instruments for kids who didn't have an instrument that they owned or could rent. Where did all that go?
It's a good question.
Good question.
I think that's a question because everybody in the room is a lot younger than I am. So
it's a different time. And the schools are funded very different.
Yeah.
In many
but
ways.
There is a part of in, within the notes that you gave me, and I'm not quite sure what the figures are, but there's a part of the California education code basically says that you will have arts programs in school. It seems like the only arts programs we currently have everywhere are, let's say, visual arts. Okay, we have art history classes because it doesn't cost a lot of money to run them. We have classes in drawing or painting or other visual two-dimensional arts, which I'm not implying that's not important. But if you talk to anybody that's maybe over about 25 or 30, there's people who are still involved in some form of music or drama by what they go see or what they listen to. But a lot of those people may not go to a museum or may not have any skills as artists. But somehow we still seem to spend most of our arts money on two-dimensional art as opposed to audio or visual art.
I think a big reason it might feel that way is because a lot of teachers, and correct me if I'm wrong, find it easier to integrate the visual arts into their existing curriculum. There's a lot of curriculum written to integrate math and science lessons with visual art lessons. And so I think that's a way that a lot of teachers are trying to be creative and make sure that their students are getting maybe just a little more arts education, because the music lessons, you know, like you said, a lot of people are not talented musically, and it's a little bit more rare.
But they're all also interested in it.
And you also need the musical instruments to integrate.
Yeah,
that's true.
Into the classroom,
exactly.
Yeah. It's not a secret to those of you who are listening. My wife is a middle school math teacher, and she harps on the fact that the students – bad choice of words, and it's not meant as a pun. she mentions often that the students that are the most successful in music, probably in math, are the ones who are also involved or have some interest in music. It just becomes a discipline that works the same way for them. And I think that's a big factor. And we can get into the correlation between that in a little bit. We have a call from Andrea in San Luis Obispo. I want to remind all of you that the phone number is 781-3875, and we will gladly let you be part of this discussion. We would encourage you to do so. This is community radio, and you're part of the community, and we would like you to be part of this. Andrea, are you there?
Hi, everybody.
Yeah.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, Fred, first of all, I wanted to say it's never too late. You can always start playing an instrument.
Yeah, I've tried and failed even as an adult. Let's not go there. I can recognize the voice. Andrea's from the San Luis Obispo Symphony.
Music Education Director, and I'm just so happy to hear everyone talking about arts education today. It's a hot topic, and I'm really glad that it's increasing some awareness today. So thanks, everyone. And I just wanted to chime in a little bit. I heard you all talking about, you know, the cuts in funding, and of course we've been seeing it dramatically over the years, and I think it all started back with Proposition 13, which everyone's probably familiar with, which was a property tax. And it really, at one point, and I think this was back in 1978, so Fred, you know, about the time you were talking about it, we lost a lot of funding in our schools that went towards the arts, and then it seems to be on a pretty steady decline since then. And certainly, like you say, up in the Paso District, we're seeing no music at the elementary level, and it was also recently cut pretty drastically in San Luis Coastal as well. And in all of our districts throughout the county, they're just barely hanging on to school music programs. So, you know, for us at the Symphony, it's really about increasing awareness. It's about educating our community, about letting people know that these opportunities are available. Through the Symphony, we offer programs like the Music Fan, which is free to our schools, and a listening program called Everyday Etudes, which is daily listening. What we're finding with the teachers a lot of times, and this is something that, you know, Jenna was talking about too, there just isn't extra time during the school day. And once we lose music education or arts education in one area, it's so difficult to get it back, because I know our teachers are just, they are so very busy that adding on one more thing can be very, very difficult. So we always try to, you know, work with our current families who are already on board. And of course, we have a wonderful youth symphony that serves about 170 students, and look to those families as our advocates within the community. And the work that Jenna and the Arts Council are doing to really create an alliance and get the word out is fantastic. And so we're excited about partnering with them and kind of in the early stages of mobilizing the army, so that we have more people that can really help to spread the word and get those parents to talk to those principals about the value of arts education in their school.
Yeah. Andrea, thank you. I'm not surprised you called. And we'll talk soon and see you at the symphony. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Yeah. She brings up some valid points, because there is a youth symphony in this county, which mm-hmm. means there are still youth involved in it, which brings up another point that when I was looking at some of the information that you folks shared with me before the program, which was there's a historically more affluent communities mm-hmm. and more affluent school districts tend to find a way to do this. And when we talk about districts where there's more of an economic struggle, both in the school district and families that live there, this is where the arts seem to be less important. But that's also the communities where we have the most truancy and the most kids that are not graduating from high school.
And we really struggle to have an equal access to the arts for all in Paso Robles. It's definitely the more affluent members of the society that are able to afford those private lessons, whether they be lessons of the fine arts and, or the performing arts of learning music.
Sasha, the facility that you operate, mm-hmm. can you explain a little bit about what that is and how that fits into this advocacy program?
Sure. I'm honored to be here. Studios in the Park, like several other nonprofits, including the symphony in the county, we looked at what's going on, and we're rising to meet the challenge, recognizing the real restrictions in funding and classroom time that are available to our teachers and our students. And so we, with the help of the Central Coast Wine Classic in 2011, developed the Kids Art Smart program. And Elalina referred to the issue of access. In Paso Robles, 47%, I believe, of our elementary children are on the school lunch program and are deemed low-income, potentially at risk by the district. Looking at that statistic and our desire to serve the at-risk children in our community, we decided to serve everyone. And to date, we've served 4,000 children, providing hands-on free field trips to Studios on the Park for quality arts classes with our professional artists. This is an example, like the symphony, where we're going into the classroom essentially, but we're bringing them to studios to make up the difference, to provide the experience of the in our case, the visual arts, to kinder through fifth grade students. This fall, we'll be serving at Elalina's school.
And we're really looking forward to it. I have to just commend this program. The Kids Art Smart program is just amazing. It's brought access to artists for our students, access to the arts museum, art studio, access to students being able to work hands-on with real art supplies, and just a real connection to how important the art that they've created, that it can actually be sold, that it could actually be a profession or a vocation mm-hmm. that they could dream to someday go into.
And let me just be an advocate for these arts organizations who are doing this for a second here. These are organizations that are a nonprofit that are struggling to make ends meet, and yet they are replacing the duty of the district to provide an arts education. So, I mean, it's remarkable that Studios on the Park is doing this and that Symphony has these kinds of programs. There are plenty of other nonprofit arts organizations throughout the county who are providing arts education during the summer, you know,
after school.
After school. They're just wonderful. But it's, you know, we're trying to make the districts realize that this isn't a long-time thing. These organizations won't get funding forever to run these programs, and that it needs to get back into the classroom with their funding.
It's real clear that the state education code says you will have arts programs in school. So, Elalina, I don't want to put you on the spot of having you, you know, at odds with your school board.
But I love my school board. They are wonderful people, and they actually agree with me. Many of them really advocate for the arts.
Well, if they agree with you, then why don't we have music programs and drama programs in elementary schools?
There's only so much money to go around, and at this point, I think they're really struggling to figure out how
but if
to
state,
fund.
If state law says you have to have it, how do you just say, I'm sorry, guys, we can't bother?
That's a good question. I think it's a question that they struggle with, and I think at this point they're relying on more of the fine arts for the teachers to integrate that as part of their curriculum requirements to try to integrate that into the classroom. And that's where the volunteer program that currently exists comes in, where once a month the students receive an art lesson, and it's a real struggle. But at this point, I think they're struggling with that same question.
How do we get out of this box?
Boy, if I had that answer.
Well, I mean, we have a better economy than we had 3 years ago.
Thank goodness.
I'm not quite sure what the budget of the Paso Robles School District is, and I don't mean to pick on you because you happen to be from Paso Robles, but it's a district I have a little bit more familiarity with also. Their lack of reserves that they had for a number of years, they have now recovered from.
Very true.
So they're in better financial condition than they were before. San Luis Obispo, San Luis Coastal School District is doing better than a lot, but does San Luis Coastal have more music programs and more drama programs and more enrichment programs than other districts in the county?
They have. Currently, I'm not positive, but they have. Okay. They've been able to retain them longer than any of the other school districts.
Yeah, and there's been this wonderful thing called the LCFF. It's the Local Control Funding Formula, and where some districts were granted extra funds, and then the district had to figure out how they wanted to spend those funds. And so part of the thing that our alliance has done is make some presentations to different district school boards and say, hey, you should consider spending that money on the arts. I'm not sure how effective we were. We made our case, and I think we've kind of started planting the seed. Again, our advocacy, you know, alliance is just starting out, so I think it's going to take years to kind of keep knocking at that door. And a lot of, I will tell you, a lot of districts, specifically the district I gave a presentation to, said, or they think that they support the arts because they have exceptional students participating in their drama program. But what they don't realize is that they're talking about a high school program and children who are electing to do that instead of children at the elementary school level that never got the opportunity to even be involved in the arts. And so while they might say they support the arts because they have a couple great programs at the high school level, supporting the arts means starting young and putting your money down to support that, because you can't just expect all students to love drama. You can't expect all students to love visual art. You've got to cover your bases because they need that creativity, and they need so many things that the arts bring.
You have a lot of schools that that I guess are assuming, from what you're saying, that are assuming that if we just wait till high school, everything will be fine. I don't know how many of you are musicians. I can tell you from my experience, I learned a lot more as a potential musician in elementary school and middle school than I ever learned beyond that. And I tried.
and you have the opportunity to learn many instruments at that point. Once you hit middle school and especially high school, you need to specialize at that point because you're going to be counted on to be part of a band that's successful and not just experiment at that point anymore.
And the experimentation is what I love about our programs, is that in every single class of 30, you can see the light bulb go on. I mean, it's just instant. Halfway through the morning, you'll start to see a child that's really they've made a connection with their creativity. They have seen their own success and the possibility of what they're imagining, what they can do. And that's the beauty of why you want to have all these offerings, to really give every single child that experience of the joy of making art and the possibilities that it holds for them.
And I think what Sasha and I have also seen is a student that struggles in the classroom mm-hmm. with being able to stay on topic or focus or just in behavior in general, all of a sudden they're blossoming. And, of course, this isn't every student that's in this scenario, but time and time again we've been able to see a student that finally feels successful mm-hmm. at something. And this something is in creativity and in creating something that everybody else is in awe of, that that they were great at something. And yeah. we want to give every child that opportunity to be great at something so that they mm-hmm. feel good about what they can contribute to the world.
Yeah, to have that sense of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. And that there's more than one solution. I think oftentimes in math and science, there's one outcome. And if that student doesn't yes. get that one outcome, yes. it's incredibly demoralizing and it's difficult and it's hard. But what the arts teach is that there's more than one solution and that questions can have more than one answer, and that kind of possibilities are limitless when you mm-hmm. Apply creativity. Creativity should be something that's applied, much like applied mathematics, applied science. You know, it is something that students can really hold on to and grow with.
So. I think we also have some ways, as I'm thinking about the symphony or an orchestra at all, has you have a number of first chair violinists, but you also have second and third chair violinists, which means there's a place for C students in music that we don't have in a lot of other things. In math, a C student is like, you know, barely teetering on not getting enough information, not getting it all worked out. Someone who's playing guitar or violin or French horn, that's a carefully used word, I'm sorry, I can't think of another word for it, a mediocre student in those regards, still has the ability to participate. It's not a matter of that they're just barely getting by. There's a place for them. Atascadero School District has they have an arts middle school.
They have a visual and performing arts. Okay. It's actually a K through 8 school.
Yeah, and well, they don't have any more money than any other district in the county to do this. So how do they pull that off?
Well, actually, Paso Robles has a magnet program too. That's a K through 5 program, and it's a visual and performing arts magnet program too. So it's just a matter of, at these schools, they've decided to focus on trying to take the curriculum and intertwine it with the visual and performing arts to the best of their ability. And they're magnet schools. That's exactly what they do. Just like Georgia Brown Elementary School is a magnet school for languages. And our language happens to be Spanish. And so we take all of our focus and try to take all the different curriculums and intertwine it with Spanish and English language mm-hmm. arts.
Let me remind you that this is Central Coast Voices, and we're talking about advocacy for the arts, and we would like you to be part of the discussion. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. I'll mention this again because I've mentioned it before, and it doesn't seem to help all the time, but I'd like you to think about this, and that is we have more time to take your calls in the first two-thirds of the program than we have in the last third, but for some reason an awful lot of people seem to wait till then to call, so I would encourage you to join us now if you have some questions, some concerns, or observations. And we have Roger from Lompoc with us. Roger, what are your thoughts or questions?
Well, I'm an older man now, and I have six children that I raised. And I know this might sound silly, but I do karaoke. And I always thought of a program called Karaoke in the Classroom or Kindergarten Karaoke. And the thing is it might sound funny and everything, but the thing is if you have a computer today, you can get all the music for, I don't know what you pay for it, pennies, but students can find music that they like. They can get a hands-on experience of trying to sing, and you wouldn't need big budgets and stuff like that. You need someone that could turn the machine on and let them pick the songs they want to sing, and get a start and get a feel for just in vocal, in singing. I'm not talking about learning how to play instruments or anything like that. But there's so many kids that I think that they would love. When I used to have my karaoke show, I had like 20 little Britney Spears coming up to sing all the time. So that's just an idea. Yeah. And I think it would work because there's so much music that's available that's already down, and if they can learn how to read, they can learn how to sing.
Yeah, very good point. Thanks for the call, Roger. He makes a very good point, because I think for a lot of people, how you learn music or how you get exposed to it affects how you can proceed. I think for the record, I can't sing any better than I can play an instrument. but my hunch is that if I had developed even a singing voice at an earlier age, I might have developed a better ear for the ability to play an instrument. Mm-hmm. There's also other things that are going on. I'm not quite sure if we've got a program like this in this county. I believe it exists, even though it's kind of under the radar. There's a program called Guitars Not Guns.
Classroom.
Well, there's actually Guitars Not Guns that some law enforcement organizations work with kids that they see leaning towards gang activity, and they basically have focused them on music, because the average teenage, mostly males, but the average teenage male given a chance to look at a guitar and deal with a guitar and learn how to play it is going to find that to be a valuable part of their life. And we've got a number of people who want to talk to us. So let's go to Penny from Paso Robles. Hi, Penny. You're on the air. And what was your thoughts or concerns?
Hi, my name is Penny, and I have two teenagers in the Paso Robles School District. And being a concerned parent and wanting my kids to be involved in the arts, and my children go to the Paso Robles Youth Arts Foundation, mm-hmm. and it's been a great way to supplement what they aren't able to offer at the schools right now. And I think a lot of people aren't aware that it exists. Mm-hmm. And there are some issues with that, like transportation and things like that. But I think until the district works that out and being able to incorporate it more into the schools, I think more parents could take advantage of the Paso Robles Youth Arts Foundation, because it is free.
And it's a fabulous, Penny, this is Sasha from Studios. The Youth Arts Foundation, like you said, is a fabulous resource. They offer performing, music, and visual arts programming after school to 300 students.
And is it free?
Mm-hmm. It's free.
It is free. My daughter goes there. It's a wonderful program.
Yeah. And who's the funding source for that?
It's community members. Okay. It's just like the Studios program. Yeah. All these individuals mm-hmm. who pitch in to support arts for our children. And it's across the county.
Okay. Penny, thanks for the call.
It's amazing.
Okay. Thanks. Take care. It's, I guess, in some regards, programs like that, if we can get people more involved in that, you're going to then get school districts that are saying, our kids are not they're not getting their homework done, but they're doing all these great after-school things in the arts. Maybe we need to pay attention to that. I don't know how we bring that about.
Yeah, I think, though, that the programs a lot of times really push the students to put their academics first, and they ask the students about their academics and really push the students to be the best student that they can be, and then try to keep them interested by encouraging them to do well in school by giving them different incentives.
Yeah,
to have other opportunities to participate into after school.
There's an after school program up in Cambria provided by the YMCA, and they do homework club first, and then they have poetry club, improv drama, filmmaking, and they do a bunch of different mm-hmm. arts after homework club. So there are programs after school that run, school first, finish homework, and then you get to participate in the arts programming.
But we may have a catch-22 if we do this. If we have a reasonable amount of after-school programs that, the program in Paso Robles that your daughter goes to, Elena, mm-hmm. you said, or your child, sorry.
Yes. It's a program that Penny just called about. Okay.
But they have only room for how many students a day?
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, maybe 10% of the school population that would be eligible can participate in that. And I'm wondering if we get into an environment where the school district says, well, we have these outside programs. We mm-hmm. have Arts Episcopo. We've got Arts in the Park. And doggone it, they're doing enough, so we don't need to do anything.
I don't think there's anybody, especially on our school board, that feels that way. I think that we all see that there's a big problem. I think that we feel really fortunate to have these additional programs, but I don't think that they replace at all. And yeah. I think there's always been great programs out there for those families that look for them. But I think right now those programs also are working extra hard to try to integrate those programs into the classroom as well. So we can reach all students.
With limited funds.
Very limited funds.
And that also may be why we see that arts programs are more successful in affluent schools, because historically, like it or not, parents that have more free time, less worry about money, have more time to be advocates for their children. And people who are struggling to get by, doggone it, I'm trying to figure out how many extra hours of overtime I get today so I can get enough money to pay the rent versus
They've also been lucky enough to have been exposed themselves. They've also been able to go to an art museum or been able to take a class in their lifetime. And we just really want to make it so that every child has that opportunity, so every child can be exposed and they can expose their children someday to that as well.
We've got Kristen in San Luis Obispo. Are you still with us on the line?
This is Rick in San Luis.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I got the wrong person. I'm sorry. Sorry, Kristen. We'll get to you in a second. I pushed the buttons out of order. I apologize. Rick, go ahead.
You guys were talking about lack of funding for arts in elementary school, and I was thinking back when I was in elementary school, back in the 1940s, we had a lot of painting and a lot of like different kinds of like visual art projects that were integrated into our classes. And our classes were all taught by one teacher, and you know, that one teacher had the training and somehow managed to integrate a lot of art like that into the classroom. And then we had music, but it wasn't like every day. I can't remember the frequency of it, but I do remember that was the only time we actually left our classroom and went to a special music room. And the music was mainly singing, and there was like an auto harp. That was the only instrument, and that was used to like accompany the whole class. But we did learn 2- and 3-part harmony, and it was really valuable. But it didn't seem to me that there was very much money at all involved in doing that, those arts.
So was this an elementary school then, or
middle
school?
Yeah, elementary school, yeah.
Okay. Will you share with us where you went to school?
In L.A., Baldwin Hills Elementary School. And I don't think there was a lot of money during and after the Second World War. America was not real affluent at the time, but those programs were definitely worked into the regular curricula. And if there was money involved, it would have been to come up with a supply. So we had that kind of powder paint that you mix with water, and there was paper and brushes and all that stuff. Is that stuff lacking today?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I am going to let Elalina take this one, because I know there are so many things that teachers have to do today that they didn't have to do, and she can talk about that.
I was just going to talk about the expectations in schools are so different than when we all went to school. The high-stakes standards and everything that's expected by the state, the amount of minutes per subject matter, it's pretty rigorous. So between the state testing and lack of funds, it's a much larger problem than just funding or standards. It's very intertwined and very complicated. And so I think it's going to take a group of really concerned individuals to really sit down in each school district and figure out how to integrate arts back into the schools in a method where we can meet all the expectations that are on us by the state, within the community, and within the United States.
Yeah, and there's some really cool programs. I know of one up in Portland called the Right Brain Initiative. And what they've done is they've taken all of the school districts in the Portland area and they've come together, and these districts have prioritized training for their teachers. And so they send their teachers to training to learn how to integrate the arts into the classroom. But it's a huge initiative that's sponsored by each city, each district, and everybody's on board. And so it takes work from the top.
Takes a whole village.
Yeah. Yes. And Portland, Oregon has been notorious for the last probably even 40 years for being a progressive city as far as the arts in the community in a lot of different regards. Let's see. Let's go to I'm sorry, Kristen on line one. Kristen, you're in San Luis Obispo also?
Yes, okay. I am. Hey, all, thanks so much for being out there and supporting the arts and getting the word out. I have two questions. One is, do you see the new Common Core standards supporting the inclusion of arts education in our local schools? And then my second question is, what can the community do to support or advocate arts and education in our local schools?
Okay. Artie, thanks very much. Can you take your answer offline? Do you mind?
Not at all.
Okay, great. Elalina, why don't you jump into that one? Okay.
Yes, I'm so excited about the Common Core. Common Core is opening the door for arts to be integrated back into the classroom, most definitely. I'm actually really excited about that, and I think most educators are as well. A lot less A, B, C, D, multiple choice answers, and a lot more creativity in how we answer and how we show our knowledge just in general. And I think part of the way that students will be that will be enabling our students and teaching them is through critical thinking and problem solving, and part of that will be by integrating arts back into the classroom. It's about time. I'm super excited that Common Core is on its way and that it's in our schools and in our classrooms. It's going to open this door that we've been longing for a long time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what we believe as the county arts education advocates. We do believe that the arts promote those pillars of the Common Core standards, so creativity, critical thinking, communication, and collaboration. And as far as how you can get involved, the Alliance has a leadership team, and what we're looking to do is to extend our network to every school district. And so we really would like parents, teachers, brothers, sisters, anybody who's retired, librarians, if you believe that the arts are essential to a school day, we really would like you to, we have a Facebook page, so you can like that. But the best way thing to do is to go ahead and email me and let me know what district you're with. I'll give you my email address.
Okay. Well, what may work better than your email, okay. Can people get your email address off your website?
Definitely, okay. Yep.
And your website is just simply artsobispo.org.
Right.
Okay. And we found generally people can't write fast enough when they're driving in their car on the radio, but Arts Obispo. And I remind people, if you just Google Arts Obispo, you'll find the website also.
Yeah, and we're asking them if we want to know what district you belong to, because when we go to advocate for arts education in each district, we'll kind of call on you. And there's no public speaking required. It's just kind of a, hey, we're meeting here, show up and stand and show your support.
Yeah, you may want to emphasize that. It seems like that's something that keeps people from getting involved. Sometimes
yeah.
If they feel like they have to stand up and somehow be part of a rabble rousing for something, but you're talking about just bodies in the room,
ideas. We'd love to come up with some. I mean, it's going to take a team of us to figure out how to get the arts back into the classroom.
Yeah. Absolutely, and also if you have a child who the arts have really touched, we'd love to hear your child's story. And children make excellent advocates. I know the school board really listens when a child wants something brought back to their school. And so we're always looking for people who are willing to just stand up, but also willing to speak. So,
yeah, school boards generally do not stop listening to when 7- and 8-year-olds stand up in a meeting to talk about something and that's important to them. I want to talk about programs that are available on a daily basis outside the school too, that in some cases are, most cases are free, but I don't want to leave Nancy waiting too long. Nancy from Atascadero is on the phone. Nancy, what are your thoughts or concerns?
Oh my gosh, there's so much to talk about.
Okay.
And I must say, I have focused my two children very early on. I'm a Suzuki piano teacher, and they're now in their 30s, but when they were 3 years old, I focused them on studying violin, and by the time they were 5, they were playing Bach, and I think most people don't realize that music is a language, and our language, if you waited until you're 7, 8, or whatever to start in school, I think it's important to have the arts in school. I don't want to put that down at all, but parents can do so much to start it earlier. My two children now are very successful in their jobs, graduates of Oxford University, and I really feel that the arts just help the mind to develop, but don't wait until they're 7 or 8. Start early.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Nancy. She brings up a good point because, among other things, I can tell you from my experience, I know that with a keyboard that costs under $100 and software that's under $50, you can self-teach piano to children, and you can teach it to adults. So people who say, I can't afford music lessons for my kids, or I can't afford an instrument, okay, there are people who $150 will never fit in their budget, but there's ways to do it if it's important to you. But let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are free out there, because Arts After Dark in San Luis Obispo, Arts, and I think it's called something slightly different than Arts After Dark in Paso Robles.
We just add Paso to the end.
Okay, yeah. Just add Paso to the end, okay. I'm amazed at the number of people who still tell me, oh, there's nothing to do in this county that's free. And doggone it, by the way, there's a free newspaper that has usually all this stuff listed. If you're not buying the newspaper, then every Thursday has it all listed. Yeah. So it's out there. So what is there beyond what you're advocating for in the classroom and in the educational process that's available for people for free, which may get them interested in something they've not done before?
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned Art After Dark, and I think that's a great jumping off point because it happens year round, the first Friday of every month, and that's in San Luis Obispo. And then very next night, the first Saturday of the month, you can access the arts for free again up in Paso Robles for Art After Dark Paso. And basically, it's a self, you know, you have to kind of guide yourself, but we provide maps and listings, and you get to walk around our beautiful cities and visit untraditional and traditional venues that believe the arts are important to our community, and they host local artists, statewide artists, and even international art in their galleries, in their beauty salons, in their restaurants, in their wine tasting rooms. And so it's a wonderful way for our community to experience art for free, 6 to 9 p.m., first Friday, first Saturday of every month. So that's the first. The other that's coming up very quickly is the Open Studios Art Tour. And this event is something that Arts Obispo has been doing for 16 years. And it's incredible because we have close to 200 artists that open their home studios for the public to tour. And so you get to walk into an artist studio where they create their art and learn about it from them, which is another reason that Studios on the Park is so amazing. And I'll let Sasha talk about that, but they're open year-round. Open Studios allows you to experience the county, different parts, places you've never been, and studios that you would never get to see. So those are two right off
both
the top.
Both of those are free.
Those I are guess, free, yeah. yeah. And to access information, again, artsobispo.org. Yeah. But Sasha's program up in Paso is just so unique and wonderful, a wonderful resource for the community.
Yeah. Sasha, people, I hope, walk in your door and say, gee, I've never seen anything like this, because I walked in the door and my first thought was, I've never seen anything like this in Paso Robles, but I've seen it before. But it's a real diverse environment for people to just walk in, and it's not like walking into what I'd call a formal art gallery where all you're going to look at is pictures on walls.
We're more than an art gallery or a museum. We are a creative workplace for the public and for local artists. So it's an open, we call ourselves a nonprofit open studios art center. We're dedicated to sharing the creative process. And the creative process, the making and witnessing of the visual arts, we believe is transformative. And so in our facility, which is right downtown across from the city park, we have 9 working studios with 25 professional artists. And every week I welcome in families, children, teens, seniors to get engaged with the visual arts and to participate in the creative process. We have after-school classes. There's also, as Penny mentioned, the Youth Arts Foundation in Paso Robles for after-school classes. We have demonstrations, like today I have a jewelry demonstration. This weekend you can do silk marbling. So there's plenty of ways to bring your families in, your grandkids in, and get engaged in the visual arts for free. We also put on the Paso Arts Fest on Memorial Day weekend in Paso Robles, which we have devoted ourselves to making entirely free to the public. This year we had 8,000 visitors for the festival.
Wow. It's amazing.
And unlike traditional arts festivals, we devote half of the city park to hands-on classrooms for children. Again, putting the arts first for our kids, making sure that there's equal access for all, is really at the heart of what Studios is all about.
Yeah. I'd also like to mention that we do have in the Paso schools the art docent program. So that's the program where the volunteers come in. But the school district does sponsor the organization and the coordinator of bringing arts K through 5 to the classrooms once a month. So we do provide all students at Paso Robles Joint Unified School District with a once a month art class by the art docent program.
Okay. Before I don't want to – we're getting a little short on time. I don't want to lose Margaret here. Margaret in Paso Robles, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. What are your thoughts or concerns?
Well, one of your people there said that she wanted to hear about some success stories. And I wanted to mention that my son went on a field trip to the studios on the park, and it was great because he got to do something he'd never tried before, which was ceramic. Mm-hmm. And he entered his project in the Mid-State Fair, and he won Best of Show.
Oh, my gosh. Congratulations. Congratulations.
I can tell you that's the only ribbon he still has up in his room. And was so proud of it because, you know, he usually didn't consider himself to be very artistic at all. And so he still talks about it all the time. So I thought that was a great program. And I was a chaperone on the trip, so I got to see him make it and all. Mm. And I don't think that I'm usually very artistic myself, but have been an art docent at the school for, well, I did it for about 4 years, and I think that's a terrific program too. So if there are any parents that are don't feel like they know much about making art, I just want to encourage them to find out about it at their school and see if they want to try it, because the kids really love it, and it's just been, I think it's been a great program. I had also one suggestion that my children, when they were at a different school, there was a regular music teacher. It was a public school, but it was a charter program, and they had a full-time music teacher, which I think would be ideal, and a program that was integrated through all the different grade levels, and they had choir at every grade level, but I think it was third grade that they all learned how to play a little plastic recorder that was inexpensive. Can you hear me? Because I don't hear anything.
Yeah, no, we can hear you.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
It was inexpensive, but they learned how to play just basics like hot cross buns and stuff like that, and a little bit about seeing some, they weren't really learning musical notes, but they had something that they learned to follow. It was mostly by memory. And it wasn't expensive, but I know you have to have a teacher there to do it. And it was, but they did manage to do it one grade level. And then when they were a little older, they had an opportunity to do instruments. But then we moved back here. And at that time, you still had fifth grade instruments. So my daughter learned flute, and she's now in the marching band at Paso Robles High School, and she's never had a private lesson. She learned it all through school programs. And my son didn't have that opportunity because music had been abandoned by that time with the instruments. So that's kind of sad for that. But they've both taken them at the Youth Arts, which somebody mentioned.
Yes.
And at least that that is something that's available for the people that can get there.
Okay. Thanks for your comments, Margaret. Appreciate you listening, too.
Okay, thank you.
I think people assume sometimes that the only people who can be musicians have to have private lessons. And I think when we, when my daughter was in middle school music, when I was in high school marching band, there were a lot of kids that never got formal training beyond what they learned on a You know, if you have a music program that meets at least two or three times a week, in the case of a classroom in high school when I was there, it was a daily class. That's how you learn for a lot of kids that can't afford private lessons. It's interesting, Sasha, what you do, your facility is gorgeous, and the facility and the layout is delightful, and there's a lot of diversity there. I'm surprised at the number of people who will walk around Paso Robles and look for things, which is helpful for you and helpful for your arts programs. We hear a lot of people who say, "Oh, there's nothing going on above the grade that's worth looking at." And I think the same.
We can prove you wrong.
Yeah. And it's, I guess for the record, those people who find walking around for art after dark maybe to be too spread out in a lot of cases in San Luis Obispo, I can tell you in Paso Robles you can do it all within about two square blocks.
Yep.
So that's a factor too. It's been great to have you all with us. And what do we do next to make a difference? To get it moving so the steamroller of arts back in school becomes a reality?
That's a great question. I think, you know, number one, you've got to join our alliance so you can stay updated on all of the news and all of our efforts. Again, the easiest way to do it is to just go on Facebook and search for Arts Education Advocates of SLO County. There's also a really wonderful resource if you just kind of want to look around. ArtsEd411.org is the California Alliance for Arts Education, and they have so many wonderful resources and research that just goes into this. So if you don't believe what we're saying and you don't really know if it's true that the arts, you know, help with critical thinking and 21st century skills and all of these things, go to their website and you can read all about it.
And, or ask any math teacher.
Right,
you know.
Yeah. So, again, go ahead and email me and let me know what your district is and let me know if you'd like to be involved. Go to artsobispo.org. And we really need to start building a network, start brainstorming. That last caller had a great idea. Districts need to start thinking small. They don't need to think big. They don't need to put a huge choral program back into the school. Maybe it just starts with hiring one teacher that goes, you know, around. And that's part of what that LCFF funding was about, is thinking, how can we start getting the arts back into the schools? And so thinking creatively, thinking together, working together, all of those things that the arts promote, we have to do it as adults, and we have to show that for our children and our students.
Okay. Thanks for joining us today, and I thank you to my guests. And I want to remind you that you can make a difference in your community, and Jenna has told you about ways in which you can get involved in that. And there's a lot of free things out there, and if you tell me or tell anyone that it costs too much money, I can tell you there's a free newspaper that most of them are listed in, and a good portion of the programs are free, and take part in that. I want to remind you that Central Coast Voices is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo. And we want to be part of what you look at and think about for your choices on the Central Coast for both yourself and your family and your community. And you can get in touch with us at voices@kcbx.org or 543-2323. And that's voices@kcbx.org with ideas for programs or things you're interested in. We'd like to hear from you. Next week, want to remind you that Chris will be with you. And over 25 million Americans cannot read or write. And a report by the San Luis Obispo Literacy Council estimates that there are 25,000 functionally illiterate residents in San Luis Obispo County. And Chris Kington Barker will be with you next week. And she will be joined by Bernadette Bernardi, who's the executive director of the San Luis Obispo Literacy Council. And she'll also be joined by a volunteer tutor. And they will talk about tutoring and basically ending literacy and how to become both involved in that and become more aware of that. And I want to thank my guests today. It has been a wonderful program. Jenna Hartzell, who's the executive director of Arts Obispo, Sasha Irving, who is the program director of Studios on the Park in Paso Robles, and Elalina Imrich Keller, who's the principal of Georgia Brown Elementary. This has been Central Coast Voices. I thank you for joining us.